Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.
Yeah, Mental Health Monday is back for another week. My name is Mick Coyle. I do hope you well, and we are talking this week at the start of Mental Health Awareness Week. So there's loads to discuss on the programme today. We'll also be joined by Mark Williams, who's takes a keen interest in the mental health of dads. He's been on the show before, but he's visiting Liverpool, so he said, oh, pop along to the tower, join us in the studio, and we can have a conversation about being a dad and your mental health around it, and the wider conversation going on around mental health today. There's some new findings that have been released this week ahead of Mental Health Awareness Week. We're going to chat about them in just a few moments' time. People over the age of 55 report experiencing better mental health than average. People aged 55 and above are the most likely to take positive steps to help themselves deal better with everyday life. Things like new interests, getting enough sleep, eating healthily and learning new things. So what can we learn from the life of the over 55s? More than 4 in 10 people, according to a new survey out this week, say they've experienced depression. And over a quarter of people say they have experienced panic attacks. The most noticeable differences are associated with household income and economic activity, with nearly 3 in 4 people living in the lowest household income bracket report having experienced a mental health problem. This is the world we live in 2017. Let's get a take on this with Cal Strode from the Mental Health Foundation. Cal, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mick.
It's interesting. First and foremost, I picked out the stats about the over 55s. Is that something that they're deciding to do themselves? They're taking extra steps, or is that just the way that their life has meant? Maybe they've got a little bit spare time now. They're able to take up new activities, new challenges. Kids are moved out. They can relax and enjoy themselves.
Yeah, I think that's certainly part of it. When people reach that age, they have more time and space to do the things that we know support good mental health. And a lot of these things, they sound, you know, almost a bit patronizing when we say them. It's eat well, get some exercise, do all these things. And it sounds like common sense, but the fact is a lot of us forget to do these things.
Yeah, and I think as well, it'd be odd, wouldn't it, to say they're doing it for their own mental health, but actually they're doing it for their own well-being, because they think, you know what, I want to do something that makes me feel good, and that's what mental health and well-being is all about.
Definitely. They've got to the stage in life where they can start taking a step back and just thinking, you know, what do I want to get out of life? What do I want to do to improve how I'm feeling right now? And we've seen from the start that some of the people who have the biggest pressures on their mental health are mothers with large households. So they're constantly taking on the emotional burden of everyone else in the household and sometimes forgetting themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, isn't it, when you look at that figure and say 3 in 4 people living in the lowest household income bracket report having experienced a mental health problem, compared to 6 in 10, that's 3 in 5, in the highest household income bracket as well. When it is skewed against people without money, it makes you wonder sort of whether it's a much wider issue, a societal issue, than we actually give it credit for.
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely a much wider societal issue. Like you say, there are inequalities in the mental health across the nation, and there are things that go on to undermine different groups of people, their mental health, and one of them groups is the low-income group. So we need to be thinking about what more as a nation we can be doing and what we can be asking of the next government as well to ensure that their policies don't undermine mental health and they support us to have good mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. A quarter of people say they've experienced panic attacks. 4 in 10 people say they've experienced depression. These are stark findings. 4 in 10 is nearly half, isn't it? We're getting to that point where we're talking about nearly half of all people are experiencing negative mental health aspects within their life.
Yeah, definitely. So the key thing with this is it is looking at mental health across our lifetimes. So it might be when we reach a kind of pressure point in our lives, maybe we lose a loved one, maybe we lose our job. There are times in life when we're all going to be under a bit more strain. And what our survey's shown today is that the majority of us, two in three, are likely to experience a mental health problem at some point. So I think it's about kind of moving the conversation beyond thinking about, you know, us and then people who experience mental health problems. Because this is about us all.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about your findings here. It says here nearly 2/3 of people say they've experienced a mental health problem. This rises to 7 in every 10 women, young adults aged 18 to 34, and people living alone. So that's women, on average, have mental health problems ahead of the average rest of the population.
Yeah, definitely. Now, part of this could be that women are more likely to be open about their mental health and more likely to report when they are experiencing mental health problems. We know that it's particularly difficult to get men's support because they are more likely to internalize things and feel like they need to go things alone. But when suicide's the biggest killer of men in the middle life age groups, we need to be questioning what more as a culture we can do to challenge kind of toxic ideas about what it means to be a man in today's world so that people get help when they need it.
Yeah, and but actually, according to those figures, actually, those that really target demographic, young adults 18 to 34, actually, you can put also all women into that demographic of being particularly at risk from a mental health problem. And that's, you know, that is literally half the population of the country.
Yeah, definitely. I'm with 18 to 34-year-olds. Again, this could be more of a willingness to talk about what they're going through. We've seen huge cultural shifts. We've been doing Mental Health Awareness Week for over 16 years now, and in that time, we've seen public perceptions and attitudes towards mental health shift massively, and we've had the recent campaign from the Young Royals with the Heads Together campaign, and they've made mental health their priority. So I think that the kind of collective impact of all of this awareness that has been raised has started to translate into a real change where people feel more able to talk about their mental health and get support. But we need to make sure that the support is actually there now, because that's the next step. We know that services are underfunded and that people are waiting sometimes up to 6 months to get any help at all.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got Cal Strode with us from the Mental Health Foundation. This week is Mental Health Awareness Week, and the theme for this week is Surviving or Thriving. There's a report that you've got out, and it's got some sort of difficult words in it, which, you know, I think when people hear this, they'll think, oh, this is huge, or this is bigger than we thought. The survey suggests our collective mental health is deteriorating. Overall, most of us report experiencing a mental health problem in our lifetime. Young adults report this at a higher level, despite having had fewer years in their lives to experience this. Our collective mental health is deteriorating. That's a path we're on there. That's a dangerous path to get away from, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, when you look at the findings, only a small minority of Brits, I think it's 13%, are living with what we would describe as high levels of positive mental health. So we need to have a think about the things in society that are undermining our mental health. There's this sense that uncertainty is the new normal with everything that's happened with Brexit and the rise of Trump and the alt-right and things like that. So I think these kind of world events could certainly be having an impact on us as well. Add that to the difficult economic situation. It's more difficult than ever for young people to get on the housing ladder. You know, going to university, getting a degree, it's no longer a kind of a ticket to success. It's more like vague directions to the train station, and you've still got a long way to go when you graduate now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know as part of your organisation, you come up with 5 steps for a mentally thriving UK. I mean, you could probably take a million years to define how you mentally thrive, but just set up for us how you think these steps might take us a little bit closer to being a much better position come the time we do this again in 2018.
Well, I think the first thing we need is we need parliaments to be doing an annual report each year where they take a look at the mental health of the nation, and they're just honest. They say if it's deteriorating, they say if things have started to improve, and you'll be able to see the direct impact of all of this funding that's supposed to be going into services. At the moment, we have a survey every 7 years called the Adult Psychiatric Morbidity Survey. And to measure something as fundamental and as crucial to how we do as a nation, as mental health, once every 7 years, it's just not good enough. We need annual reports so that we can track the mental health of the nation, so we can respond to the challenges that we're facing.
Yeah, absolutely. If people want to find out more about the work that you guys are doing this week, or they want to read the report themselves, Surviving or Thriving, Cal, where do they need to head to?
Yeah, just head over to the Mental Health Foundation's website. So that's mentalhealth.org.uk, or you can follow us on Twitter. We're just at Mental Health.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you for your time today. Thanks for joining us on Radio City Talk.
Great. Thanks, Nick. Bye.
There you go. That's Cal Strode, who works at Mental Health Foundation. It's Mental Health Awareness Week this week. I know a lot of people have been getting in contact with the station in recent weeks about mental health story. We thank you for sending those across. We try and feature as many of the stories as we can. If you've got a story that you want to send in, please do so. You can send it in via mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. www.mickcoyle.co.uk. And we could be talking about your story, if there's an event you're involved in, or maybe you just want to offer some thoughts on something you've heard on the programme. More than happy to read out your emails. Just wanted to mention something which people have sort of tagged me in and just linked me into it via social media. Piers Morgan talking about being mentally ill in regard to a Brad Pitt interview. He tweeted earlier saying, I just read Brad Pitt's GQ interview. It made me cringe. He's not mentally ill. He just needs to man up. Talks about the fact that Paul Gascoigne had been on his programme. He said, I'd never tell mentally ill people to man up, but I would say to a mentally healthy people who shirk dealing with normal life issues. He says, I'm allergic to celebrity, disingenuously playing the victim card. Simple as that. And take your pick from that one. Somebody asked him, how do you stay so positive? He says, I man up. I think sometimes like that, it's a little bit unhelpful. There might be a story in a newspaper or a magazine which spins a story in a certain way, you know, which creates drama around somebody's life, and from that it might be intimated that, you know, there is an addiction issue or there is an issue around OCD, and you know what happens in the past and has happened in the past, that person gets labeled as being bonkers or, you know, a psycho or somebody who needs to be locked up and put into an insane asylum. And that is the sort of culture that we've had in this country for years and years and years, that, oh, you can't cope. What do you mean you can't? Oh, send for the men in white coats, you know, the straitjackets and all that kind of stuff, padded cells. Yeah, that's the sort of thing that people who work in the mental health field are dealing with, that there is a presumption that if somebody says, you know what, I've been struggling. I've been struggling because I've been feeling down. I've been struggling with depression or stress or anxiety. I can't cope. And as a result of that, I turn to drink. As a result of that, that fed into addictions. And it might be drinking, in Brad Pitt's case. It might be gambling. It might be OCD. It might be all sorts of different things. It might be video games. People get caught up in these things. And then Piers Morgan shows up. Piers Morgan, who's paid to have opinions. And he goes, oh, just man up. But, you know, you think, it's like saying to somebody, that thing that you are, that thing who you feel like you've become, you, that thing that you think that has taken over your life and defined you as a person maybe throughout your entire adult life, don't be that anymore. Now, if it was that easy, Piers Morgan, there wouldn't be a mental health crisis in the country. You'd just simply have everybody manning up. And how do you man up? How do you man up? You know, what, you're going to build a shelf or something like that? Is that how you man up? You know, if you have got issues around mental health based on, you know, losing a family member or a loved one, if you've got issues around your mental health in regard to a job that you're struggling to keep up with in terms of the workload that you're dealing with, that you never see your family, you don't have any spare time, you don't have any spare cash, life is getting on top of you. Maybe you've got postnatal depression. Maybe you had post-traumatic stress disorder from seeing, you know, friends and colleagues in Iraq and Afghanistan being blown up in front of you. Are you going to tell that person to man up? Put yourself together. These people have got complicated lives. You know, this idea that you go, oh, man up. What does that actually mean? And I think, you know, Piers Morgan is paid to have an opinion, so that's the opinion that he's expressed. But this is exactly what I'm talking about when I talk about mental health in the wider context, that you can't just say to somebody, well, don't be depressed then. Well, don't be sad then. Well, why don't you try smiling once in a while? These things do not work, and these things have been tried, and now we're starting to get to the point where organisations and charities and the NHS are trying to get their heads around just how huge this whole thing is. Piers Morgan comes along, solves all everybody's problems by saying, you know what, you need to man up. Piers Morgan, I think you need to shut up.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
Okay, so it's Mental Health Monday. My name's Mick. I do hope you're well. Plenty moving in the world of mental health on Mental Health Awareness Week. Feels like every week's Mental Health Awareness Week on the programme at the moment. We've been talking about it a lot, even outside of our Mental Health Monday programme. Check out Radio City Talk every weekday from 11 a.m. for Liverpool Live, where we touch on things which are happening in the news. And so very often things that are happening in the news are starting to really bleed into the world of mental health, and people are really talking about it. We're joined now on Mental Health Monday
Monday by a guest who was on the podcast and on the show not so long ago, actually, but he was on the phone. And we always say to people, if you're ever around Liverpool, make sure you come and visit us at the top of the Radio City Tower. And often they do. Mark Williams is such a person. Mark, great to see you. Thank you for your time. You're from Fathers Reaching Out, various organisations that you get involved in when it comes to mental health and mental health awareness. And you're in town today. And here you are, the Radio City Tower. Not bad, is it?
Not bad. No, it's lovely to be up here as well. It's absolutely fantastic.
It's a lovely part of the world, particularly when the sun is shining, as it is while we speak today. When we spoke on the programme, we were talking about dads in particular. That cross-section of society which has mental health issues as well, time and time again, we hear about young men in particular, 16 to 25, 16 to 30. When you talk about dads, what sort of age are we talking about? Because people now can become dads if you're one of the Rolling Stones well into your 70s.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, exactly. We don't talk about the young dads, you know, the 17, 18-year-old dad, which, as we know, when it happened to me, I was 30 years of age, you know, when all this pressure of that transition to the fatherhood, and then your partner's got postnatal depression, severe postnatal depression, so that, and then you could give up work, look after her, the baby, you know, and then that, you know, so you can imagine a young dad, you know, and it must be very hard, especially this time. So it's hard times. I think it's... things, what you find with fathers especially, it comes with depression. It looks different than women. So, for instance, it'd be a lot of anger, perhaps a lot of drinking as well, where before the baby was born, that may be not the case. Like, so we got to look at the behaviours of the father, not just what he is doing.
Is there anything about the fact that, you know, families now, often families are starting as people reach their early 30s, whereas in the past, you know, it will be, you know, perceived to be absolutely normal to be 18, 19, 20 and have a couple of kids. I wonder whether or not maybe, you know, our lifestyles are such now in the 21st century that you might live a certain life and a certain way of life throughout your 20s, and then parenthood comes along and it's such a sea change to what you've been experiencing, that maybe that's an experience which previous generations haven't had because their change has come at different times or has been more progressive as they've grown older.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot of pressure today to be a parent as well. You know, social media has got a big part to play, as we know. And I know my father, you know, was a minor. He used to put food on the table and, you know, and look after us. And I was, that's all he was, you know, meant to do, like, in his mind, you know. So today it's a lot differently. I think more fathers want to stay home. You know, the mother's going to work. You know, the pressure's like 200,000 single fathers, let alone, you know. So, but when you talk about the questions, it is. I think it's a lot harder today, I think.
Do you think the choices that are available to people, as you say, you know, your dad, he had his job. That was his job. And that was society's view of what that job should be on behalf of the father. I wonder whether or not now there's... there's the idea that there's an option, you know, that you can choose to do things in a certain way. But for a lot of people, it's not the reality.
Yeah.
You've got to go to work, you've got to earn the money because the bills have got to be paid and the mortgage has got to be paid. So as much as we'd like to have this idea that, paternity leave is increasing, shared family leave and all that kind of stuff, when it comes down to it, for a lot of dads out there, it's just the norm to have to just go to work.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think my own personal experience, what happened when I had to give up work, you know, to look after my wife who was severely ill, you know, that had a massive impact on my mental health, you know, so I couldn't get out and do my, you know, what I was told to do, you know, and provide for the family and then that social aspect around it, you know, which is talking. I couldn't talk to anyone really, you know, around that time. So, I think it's really important. I think mental health, as we know, it is improving, you know, awareness. But I think what I do tell men is, you know, just... if you are struggling, make sure you go and get the help. You know, that's the most important, you know, because they really do get that help. You know, the quicker the recovery will be then.
Because of the nature of the programme, often people who speak to us have had positive mental health stories in that they have had a problem and they've spoken out, they've found help. Does anyone ever say to you, Mark, well, I tried to speak and, you know, they faced a brick wall or they faced, you know, derision. I mean, it's not a story that we've heard on this programme yet in terms of that sort of thing, but that must happen because there's a huge misunderstanding about mental health out there.
Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of these men in general, you know, using, going into services like for drugs, angers, and even violence in some cases as well, when in fact the underlying, you know, could be trauma or some sort of depression or, like, you know, I was diagnosed at 40 with ADHD, like, you know, a condition I've had all my life in school, you know, in the 80s, you know, I was never picked up in school. So that was my final diagnosis, really. And obviously, I was postnatally depressed, you know, during that time, you know. So, you know, from the impact of my wife's illness, you know, as well. But certainly, I think, you know, we know about the rates of amongst men who are taking their lives as well. You know, I think it's, yeah, it's you know, it's, if there's anyone out there worried about it's going to impact on their work, you know, because a lot of fathers will say, or men, they say, oh, well, it might be on my record in work, you know, with a GP. Seriously, I work in mental health. You know, I've come out 6 years ago that I had depression. Honestly, just go to get ill help. You're the most important person.
Absolutely. Matt Williams is with us. He's here in the studio, father of founder of Fathers Reaching Out. He's a dad who's battled mental health issues as well following the birth of his own children. You mentioned social media. Social media, it's a bit of a game, isn't it, for some people? But it's amazing how often it comes back as a theme, as being a reason why people have negative experiences when it comes to their own mental health. What sort of things have you seen? What sort of things have people told you about how they perceive things like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter?
About mental health, is it? Yeah. Yeah, do you know, I've been lucky. I've had a really good response from my community. I'm a youth worker, you know, so that, I think I had a, I was already in the community anyway, there doing my work. I haven't, if I'm honest, I was one of those people who didn't know what mental health looked like, you know, years ago. You know, how can anyone get depressed? I was exactly that person. Like, so I do challenge you, and I always say, well, you know, just DM me and I can explain it to you, like, you know. So I think, but yeah, it is, you know, even postnatal depression of men, you know, that's even a bigger taboo, you know, in social media.
And I think one of the things as well is that, you know, it's how we view social media. Because one of the big things that comes back to us is people say, oh, people always play, you know, portray their lives as being, you know, fun and exciting and exotic or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't tell a different story. But it's in the same way when you get your holidays, you know, photos back, the ones where nobody's smiling or the ones where, you know, someone's smudging the camera, they're the ones that go in the bin, you know, or get deleted. So it's not a surprise that people put the happy photos on there, the ones where things look great and exciting. But it's how we then perceive it. It's how we then look at those and go, oh, their family life is perfect. Instead of thinking, these are just the photos they've chosen to show us from this day out at the beach or this, you know, walk in the countryside or whatever it must be. So we've almost got to reprogram our own heads, I think, about social media.
Yeah, definitely. Like the material stuff, you know, especially like, you know, we see the flashy car and house, big house and all that. And some of these families I've actually spoken to previous before they put their post on. And seriously, it ain't like that. Honestly, it really ain't like. So it's not as happy as people think it is on Facebook. And you know, people see me on TV, radio and all that stuff now and again, but you know, I have my days as well. You know, I put the posts. The good thing about social media, well, for me, to make awareness, I've got to get myself out there, so that's why I do use social media. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't use it so much. You know,
do people go just presume, oh, Mark, he's all right now, he had problems, now he doesn't have problems, and look, he's on the telly, he's on the radio, and all that kind of stuff, he must be absolutely fine? Do you feel that sort of need to almost check yourself and kind of go, right, well, I know I'm in this position now, but I'm on a journey and I'm still on a journey?
Yeah, and for me, I'll always be on a journey, I think, because obviously I always look after myself with whether it's fitness, healthy eating. And, you know, I only a couple of months ago, I had a bad day, you know, a couple of bad days. Not a day where you just get fed up, a really bad day, like, you know, when I could feel it a little bit, okay, I need to pull myself back here, like, you know. So yeah, it's an ongoing, but at least I know the triggers, and that's the most important, you know, is finding those triggers and then, okay, reassessing yourself and then just moving on then.
And in terms of, you know, when people often say, you know, we'll only be in a good place when we treat mental health in the same way you treat a broken leg. But I've noticed quite a lot recently that the language that get used around mental health, things like addiction, people who might be addicted to something like alcohol, even if they're 15, 20 years dry or clean, they still refer to themselves as an alcoholic. Whereas if you break your leg, you never refer to yourself as still having a broken leg.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you had a broken leg, it got fixed, and now your leg isn't broken anymore. Do people come to you and say, I had depression and now I don't? Or do they say to you, I had depression and I still get waves of those types of feelings occasionally? Because it doesn't stop, does it?
No, exactly. I think when my wife's postnatal depression happened, obviously that impacted on my, and I was depressed, obviously, depression. And it took me 6 years of struggle in silence, if I'm honest with you, and I had a breakdown. And then my wife's depression come back now, because now she was looking after me. And that's one of the reasons why I campaign for a more holistic approach. But it's an ongoing thing, I think. And I think we, I got the skills and my wife's got the skills now, so we can prevent it. And I think we should be talking about it, like physical health, really. So, or any other illness, we always talk about illnesses where how to prevent it. So we should be talking about it or how to prevent it, even if we haven't got anxiety, depression or PTSD. So at least we'll have some education if somebody in the family's got it. And also if it does happen to us in the future. So we need to be talking about, everyone's got mental health, good or bad, as I always say. We've got to talk about mental health as we all got mental health, but some has got it good and some has got it bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, thank you for your time today. Great to see you at the top of the Radio City Tower.
You got time to
take some photos before
that'd
you got
be
various meetings and out about town. If people want to find more information about the work that you're doing in your story, I think we mentioned it all last time you're on the podcast, which people can download the previous episodes, but you're on social media as well. Where can people find you?
Yeah, it's Mark Williams, FMH, and if you just Google Mark Williams Fathers Reaching Out, you can see the work I'm doing as well.
Mark Williams, thank you for your time. Founder of Fathers Reaching Out and our guest today on Mental Health Awareness Week, special edition of Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Mark, thanks for your time.
Thank you, thanks.
Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Yeah, you might be hearing a lot in the news this week about mental health stories, Mental Health Awareness Week. Waiting time targets for mental health treatment need to be urgently reviewed, according to a children's charity. Barnardo's say the 18-week limit doesn't apply to all under-18s, with some going a year or more before receiving help. It also wants the next government to ensure all schools have a counsellor. That's a story about from Barnardo's in regard to children's mental health. And what about this from the Prison Reform Trust? And we've got a little bit of time in forthcoming weeks to talk about this. And maybe you've got an insight into it yourself. You can offer your own thoughts. This has really shocked me. I don't know whether or not I've misread the figures or I'm misreading the figures. The number of prisoners who've tried to take their own lives is apparently significantly higher than the general population. Figures from the Prison Reform Trust show 46% of women and 21% of men behind bars have tried to do so. 46% of women and 21% of men behind bars have tried to take their own life, compared to 6% of people outside of jail. So if you're a woman and you go to prison, according to that, you're nearly 50-50 as to be driven to the point where you're thinking about taking your own life. That strikes me as particularly high. The figures run about 1 in 5 for men and significantly lower, although still 6% for people outside of prison. The organisation, that's the Prison Reform Trust, wants the next government to deal with a rapid decline in safety and standards in prison. That's how they're seeing the issue there. But you can see how I've linked that to mental health. If there's a story that you want to talk about or you think something we've touched on the programme is relevant to you, do drop us an email and tell us about it. Tell us why you want to get involved. If you want to be a guest on the programme, then absolutely we're keen to hear from you. My email address never changes. It's mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk.
Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.